the best advice I ever received in anything is be interested, not interesting. So be interested in what people have to say. Don't try and be interesting to everybody, because at the end of the day, people care that you listen.
This is Property Invest Story, where we talk to successful property investors, find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategy. In this episode, we're joined with Alice and Justin Hagen, co-founders of Caliber Real Estate and decade-long experts in property management. The Hagens share how they went from missed opportunities to success in managing others' properties. They also show listeners how opening a business is more often than not worth the risk. Also, before we delve into this episode, go over to propertyinveststory.com and subscribe to receive your free property investor case studies, where you'll learn how to generate passive income from your properties. Go there now to sign up for free. For the Hagens, property investment has always been about taking calculated risks and executing well thought out strategies.
We thought we were young, we could bounce back, we could, you know, just we were high risk and high growth at that stage. And I don't regret anything. I thought that high risk strategy was a good one in that market when we moved up to Brisbane.
And in the early stages, when you're young, you can, and you know, that's, everyone's got a different risk profile, but I think you've got an opportunity to make informed decisions and take, you know, educated risks about, you know, trying to, you know, create wealth and things moving forward. Like, everybody's different, and you know, I love property because you can add value yourself. And if you want to get in there and, you know, get a new roof on or do a new, you know, put carpet, all that, you can add value, you can increase the rent, you can, you know, you can make the property more appealing. So I think when I say educated risk, it is, everything's a risk, but you know, if you know what you've done your research, I think, you know, there's good opportunity.
According to the couple, investors should be well informed about an investment's conditions before taking on any opportunities to leverage for growth and equity.
I just think accumulating, you know, and I think obviously lending's a lot different now to what it was then. Obviously, you could leverage a lot more than what you could now, and probably for a good reason in a slowing market. But I think when those opportunities come, if you take that risk when you have the opportunity to leverage, or you get some growth out of a property and you can use some equity to potentially then use that equity to buy a property that you may flip or, you know, renovate and sell. So, you know, it's not a long-term risk. It's a short-term, you know, risk while you do that renovation to get that money back in. So I think, yeah, it's just about using, you know, researching what strategies you can use, because I think obviously people will speak to their finance brokers about, you know, what strategies they can use to best utilize their funds, etc. But, you know, everyone's got a different income, everybody's got a different mindset around that. But I think, yeah, you've just got to see what works best for you and, you know, have a chat to a professional in that area.
Definitely. Yeah.
Manage cash flow during those times, especially if you're doing a flip, if you've got enough for the, you know, the contingencies. Finding things when you're renovating.
The couple themselves were independent of any property investment mentors, opting to do the research and creating a team themselves.
We did a lot of research ourselves, and I think, you know, the main thing is just getting familiar with the current town plan, council's regulations, how long things are going to take to get approved, you know, what issues are you going to come up against, and just all the extra costs involved, as well as
how much we could do ourselves,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, things you could do yourselves, yeah. You know.
Who are our contractors? Who are we going to have as part of our team?
Yeah. And those things. And obviously one thing I think that people maybe overlook as well is that when you do it, generally when you do a subdivision, the bank doesn't want to lend you money to do a subdivision. They'll lend you the money to buy the property, and then you've got, you know, the cost of the subdivision, all your services that you'll have to pay for generally yourself before the bank will come and relook at doing it. So it's just making sure you have all the contingencies for those those different things. I think that's the, you know, that's definitely the key.
In terms of books, the couple of different favourites. However, both quoting them as contributors to their success in property investment.
I love books about specific things. I will say I'm not. I like books about property and business. I think a business book I would read is Good to Great. I think, you know, that's a really great book, and it, you know, breaks down, you know, how you know, systems and culture and everything will build, you know, a great business. And for property, it's, you know, it's quite cliche, but Rich Dad Poor Dad, I think one of the first books I ever read. It's very easy to understand how property works. It's not confusing, and yeah, it's just a simple way of understanding how property could work. And, you know, obviously anyone in their 20s that reads that will probably get an idea about what's, you know, what's going on, and probably give them a bit of an idea or view into how that can work.
Excellent.
And I've recently just read Richest Man in Babylon, and I found that really amazing as a good foundation to your path to investment as well. I've actually started reading it to our boys as well, just so they have, because it's at school, they just don't teach you about finances and budgeting. And I think that's a critical step of actually understanding how to create your own wealth as well, how to manage money.
As for their best advice ever received, the couple had different yet equally inspiring messages, both relevant to the investment and business side of things, yet also life in general.
I would say the best advice I ever received in anything is be interested, not interesting. So be interested in what people have to say. Don't try and be interesting to everybody, because at the end of the day, people care that you listen and understand and take note of what they're saying to you. So for me, in business and in my personal life, I think that's, you know, one of the key things that I try and stick to.
Mine is always be a student, so always be learning.
The Hagans had always been big on subdividing, even with their first property back in 2006. However, they made sure they researched the strategy thoroughly before applying it to any property investment.
2007 would have been the first one.
And that was that after your first purchase, which was your
first? Yeah, so October 2006, we purchased our first property and then an investment unit. And then, yeah, I think June 2007, we purchased our first subdivision. And through that strategy, obviously, and I think the thing about subdivisions is there's a lot of different scenarios. You've either got properties that are already on two lots, properties that need to be are on one lot that need to be, you know, into two lots, and obviously the price difference as far as cost wise doing that can differentiate a great deal. So I think it's understanding what you need to do and what costs are involved before you dive in, because sometimes it doesn't always work out how you think it will.
While the Hagans have had success in subdivision, they are wary of the strategy, as they know that its results depend on the market and zoning changes.
Oh, look, it just depends, because obviously it's not something you always do straight away. So when we look at a property, we look at it and go, all right, well, there's there would be potential there for a subdivision. And depending on, you know, what the market would be doing in that area at any given time, I think, you know, you could look at subdividing down the track. And generally when a property is subdividable, there's potential for that zoning to change again. So if you don't really need to subdivide it right at that point in time, you know, I think there is benefits to waiting. So I think letting a bank know whether you're going to subdivide it or not, it may in some circumstances, I guess, help, you know, getting the finance, knowing that they might get, you know, they may get a portion of the money back sooner, et cetera. But yeah, I think it's case by case, definitely.
For a particular property the Hagans had bought, the house on the land had to be moved to a separate lot.
So that property was on the north side of Brisbane. It was 810 square metre block. It was on one lot. So that meant that obviously it required a full subdivision through council before you could sell off any of the property.
So, well, sorry, I'll just say, so when we purchased that property, we put a tenant in it straight away. So we were collecting income.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, we're doing this. Sorry.
Anyway. Yeah, that's right. And so the main house straddled both properties, both obviously potential lots there. So Alice briefly mentioned about this one before that we had to think about what, you know, what is the best outcome for this house, because it was such a nice house that had been renovated probably within the previous 5 years. So what we did, we actually set out a plan to go and find another property, a block of land. And I just wanted to find, we just wanted to find something as, you know, reasonably priced as possible that we could fit this property on, because obviously any house that's existing that you can move has a value already. You're already adding value to it because, you know, the house was about 200 square meters, so we had to get it cut in half, moved on a truck. So we found a block of land, and I believe it was around 235,000, and it was only about a kilometre and a half from the location of where the blocks were that we were subdividing. So through that process, you have to obviously get council approval to move the property, the termite inspections, etc. So we got the green light on that. And while all that was happening, the blocks of land were in council with the approval coming through. There was a few issues we had with that subdivision as far as stormwater. The property did slope towards the back.
They struggled for approval from the local council for certain development features of the property. In fact, claiming that the most forgivable element of the property development were the costs.
So as part of the approval, we had to request some pits, stormwater pits in the back, which council doesn't really like approving that, obviously, because it can cause extra overland flow when they do overflow. And just things like that. So it was actually a really good one to sink our teeth into to get a real grasp on what things happen, because it was a start to finish dealing with council. Obviously, you had the town planners subdivision company that helped us along the way with that as well.
Yeah.
The cost, like, if to give a ballpark of cost, obviously they've changed a bit now. It's quite a little bit more expensive at the moment to do it, but back then you're looking at about between 65,000 and 75,000 to do a subdivision, which would include, this is from one lot into two lots. So you're looking at, that's including all your sewer connections, water meters, and obviously that can vary depending on how far you got to bring your sewer and stormwater services. But as a ballpark, that was about, you know, the round average price of what we were costing us back then. For the same thing now, you're probably looking at around 100,000 to 110,000, just purely based on high council contribution costs. And again, depending on what council you're doing it in, can vary as well.
Coming up after the break, we'll delve further into the Hagans' property investment strategy and how they've built a successful portfolio.
Obviously, council has different zoning for different areas.
Their profits while applying the subdivision strategy on their properties.
The combined result was a great profit. Individually, the subdivision wasn't a massive profit, but there was, obviously, it was a joint development in essence, really.
And that's next. I'm Tyrone Shum, and you're listening to Property Investory. Hey, podcast listeners. If you're finding this podcast super informative, then guess what? I'm giving you an exclusive free case study from property investors like this one, just for listening. These case studies are from experienced property investors where they share specific strategies and numbers of their portfolio. Simply text me your email address to 0499881040 to get your free case studies. Now back to the show. The couple believe that the rise in costs for subdivision currently are due to overall pricing differences in all the stages required for subdivision.
Contractor costs to lay your services, council contributions have increased. Just the overall cost of anything, you know, anything to do with it. Obviously, your plumbing trades, all that sort of stuff, who get in there and do your pipe work. etc. It's just all increased overall. So I think, you know, you've really got to have at least $100,000 in the budget if you're doing a, you know, subdivision from one into two.
While the subdivision strategy is a long and complex one, the Hagans seem to be experts in the process, particularly knowledgeable about zoning and how a potential lot can be subdivided.
Obviously, councils have different zonings for different areas. The beauty of the councils now is very easy to get the information. You can go straight on their website, interactive mapping for Brisbane City, and you can actually find out what the zoning is for each area. The zones have changed over the years. So it's 2014, they all changed. They changed the naming of them and all, and different areas. But yeah, overall, you just need to get on there and find out what you can put in your, you know, the location that you're looking. And the other key thing is one side of the street may be a different zoning to the other. So it's important to get on and actually confirm what the zoning is for that particular property as well.
Their knowledge on subdivision did not come overnight, however. They continuously built on this investment strategy by learning and reviewing their experiences.
I think being, you know, being in the same office with the subdivision people and just having a general real interest in the subdivision strategy, I think you just find out different things that can help you along the way. So, you know, for a corner block, there may be a different ruling for land size, like it might be an average land size as opposed to, you know, you definitely have to have 400 square metre blocks. There's just lots of, the more information that you gather and the more people you speak to, especially town planners or people that have done subdivisions before, they can give you a really good insight. And you might think, oh, I couldn't do that subdivision there because of this. But there's a lot of information that you can go, all right, well, actually, if you do X, Y, Z, that is a possible subdivision. And you just then have to weigh up, right, is that extra cost going to be worthwhile? And I think that's the real key, is just understanding the cost behind each subdivision. And I always say as well, subdivision will generally cost you the same in a suburb, 10K to the city, as it will 3K to the city. So you've got to work out, all right, the value of that land once I subdivide it, how am I going to, you know, consume that $100,000 we've just spent? How's that, you know, how's the reward going to be at the end of it? You could turn around and subdivide, you know, do a $700,000 subdivision and the blocks may be worth $300,000 each or $325,000, whereas you go in a city, you know, so that's where it's important again to go back and do your sums and look at the end result.
Yeah, feasibility.
Rather than just thinking it's a cheap property, you know, because a lot of people think, oh, it's cheap, it's a cheap property, I'm going to subdivide it and make money, whereas if potentially they would look to spend a little bit more to go closer into the city, they'll get a better reward for their, you know, for their effort.
For the first subdivision project, the Hagans were able to make a large profitable return.
The initial cost for that property was $555,000 for the initial
purchase.
Oh, no, it wasn't that much. It was $455,000 for that one. That was in that Everton Park. Yeah. $455,000. And then, yeah, I believe that once we, with all the survey and the whole subdivision, I believe that one came in at about $73,000 to $75,000. And because there was, I guess because that was a combination really development, because there was two parts to it. There was the opportunity to move that other house. So the other house got moved off the block, and we ended up just selling the two blocks off because at that point in time we were looking for just turnover to start, you know, moving the investments forward. The blocks sold for just over 300. I think they were 325,000
each,
off the top of my head. So it wasn't a massive capital gain, but it was enough for us to spend the money on the house move that we did, and we actually made a decent profit on the property that we moved to the other location, because the block of land cost us $235,000. We moved it, and with some work we did, I think we spent about $150,000, and it sold for $600,000.
Oh wow!
So there was that was probably a much better result. Like the combined result was a great profit. Individually, the subdivision wasn't a massive profit, but there was obviously it was a joint, you know, a joint development in essence, really.
The whole process took around 9 months for the Hagans, although the process had been sped up by the local council.
The whole process from start to finish was about 9 months, I believe.
Yeah, okay.
For that one. Yeah, it was, and council have improved a lot now. There's a, in Brisbane, they got a process called RiskSmart. You can get subdivisions through, approvals through in 4 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks, which, you know, previously it was three to four months. And then,
wow.
You know, so there has been a lot of streamlining going on, and, you know, that's great. And I'm glad the council's done that because obviously holding costs in any development, especially a small development, really, you know, really can chew up profits, that's for sure.
For investors looking to get into subdivision strategy, the Hagans strongly recommend keeping any existing houses and to hold off on any development for as long as possible.
My number one thing as far as subdivision, the best subdivision you can get is one that you can keep the existing house. Because I think just doing a pure subdivision, the margins aren't massive. And the risk is higher because if you're demolishing a house and you've got two vacant blocks sitting there with no income and you're trying to sell the blocks off, because the one thing about finalising a development when it's one lot into a two lot, you can't have an existing property sitting over the two properties, which is a different story if you're on two lots. If the property is already on two lots, you can actually sell it and you could actually have secured contracts. And then you could demolish the house, you know, subject to obviously, you know, ticking all the other boxes. But, you know, there's potential to holding income for a lot longer. So I think there's those things to consider as well. So number one, if you could find a property on a corner block with subdivision potential, that is, you know, that would be, it's not a unicorn because they're out there, but if you can find them, there's generally money, you know, you could make money if you buy well in that circumstance.
They strongly push for the buy and hold strategy, choosing it as the first thing they'd advise themselves on if any given opportunity to go back 10 years.
If I met myself 10 years ago, I would probably say when you're investing, hold the potential investment for as long as you can before you develop it. I think that's my key takeaway, and that's, you know, one thing, and I think I mentioned that's the strategy that we're looking to get involved in our next journey. So I think, you know, for me, I'm probably looking back at that now, and I'm at that, you know, looking back at that 10 years now and going, all right, what would have I done different, or what would have we done different? I think that's the key.
And then I would actually say, if you don't need to sell it, hold on to it. So only sell if you've got a purpose, a reason to.
Yeah, something better to do with the money, you know, obviously another opportunity. I think that's key. It's very tempting to always take the profit then, but if you don't need to, yeah, absolutely.
For their future plans, the couple aim to buy more properties to hold and develop in the long term, while also building custom homes for their clients.
Like I was mentioning, for me, it's about buying properties that are just in reasonable condition, properties that have not, you know, potential to be demolished. And hold those properties for a period of, on average, 7 years, and then look at developing them. That's definitely the strategy that I'm looking to put in place. And the reason being is that there's a lot of great areas within 10 km of the Brisbane CBD that have a lot of old houses. And I think if you can get, you know, buy properties in that areas, and that's obviously, you know, generic. There's obviously some suburbs will always perform better than others, but, you know, for me, that's what we're looking for. And then build a brand new property on that, and if we're in a position to hold that property, rent it out, get the depreciation, and all those things. Or if the market's in an opportune time, we'll, you know, maybe sell them down. So the strategy will be to buy properties over the next 5 years, and then the property that was bought, you know, in the first year, then start developing that in the sixth year,
So then it's finished the seventh year. So and see what happens.
And then I'm really excited about, we've just, you know, completed that family home build, and we project managed that with our builder. And we had such a great time being able to specify every single fixture and fitting in the property, and, you know, choosing everything. And just being in real estate now for the last 9 years, we know what our clients want, like what our buyers are looking for. So to be able to build a boutique townhouse development and, you know, start to finish project manager, that excites me. And then also doing custom build homes as well, and then selling those.
Fantastic.
So different strategies, but like we can merge our both of our our dreams together into property strategy.
The Hagans are willing to hold off on their portfolio for their certain long-term benefits.
Yeah, it'll be a buy and hold as many as we can. But you know, if we buy, say, 8 properties over the next 5 years, and then we've got to develop and sell 4 of them, well, you know, that's great. Still building our portfolio to a point to create that cash flow as well.
From the Hagans' recommended book list is Rich Dad Poor Dad. They claim the most meaningful lesson they learned from the book is,
I just think more the leverage. Like when we started investing, it was like, how do I leverage that money? How do I buy an investment property, or how do I buy something that I can then leverage to then buy something else?
Yeah, so you don't necessarily have to have the
or your
deposit.
Own, yeah, you don't actually have to. And I think that's probably the biggest thing that I learned. And obviously in a rising market or a market that you can add value to a property and then go and speak to the bank again and get the property revalued and then look at, you know, using that equity. That, you know, that's probably the key thing that I learned out of that book. And, you know, I think it's a great takeaway.
The Hagans believe that their determination and goal-focused mindsets are the biggest contributions to their success.
I think that determination and just that we're just really goal-focused, and we're not after an overnight success. We're all about developing up to reach to our goals. Like our perfect example is our most recent long-term goal we've just been able to accomplish. So setting long-term goals, keep reflecting and keep working towards them.
I'm the same. I'm continuously setting, you know, achievable short-term goals to contribute to achieving a long-term goal. I think that's the main thing, to reward yourself when you achieve those short-term goals and obviously have a path to getting to that long-term goal is very important.
For such rewards, the couple are simply looking forward to spend their time as a family with their children, opting to go travel together during the holidays.
I have to admit that we have only started rewarding ourselves recently. That's a lesson learned from us, that we didn't actually give ourselves enough acknowledgement along the way. But you go, Joe.
Yeah, and like we've been on a couple of great holidays in the last 12 months. Just actually spending, like for us, reward is spending time, take time out with the kids and think back and take a look at what you've achieved and then, you know, look forward to see what, you know, what we can do. And I think, you know, for us, holidays with the kids is a great reward, because always other little bits and pieces, but it's, you know, that's the main focus. It's just, you know, time and being away with the kids is great.
If you'd like to connect with the Hagans, you can reach out to them via...
You're best probably to find me on LinkedIn. I'm more active on LinkedIn than I am any other platform. But and our company, you can follow our company at Calibre Real Estate on Facebook. And yeah, we've always got information going out for landlords, tenants, buyers, sellers. We release a lot of blog articles weekly, so if people want to just get on and have a look about what we're about, feel free to follow us.
Thank you to Alice and Justin Hagan, our guests in this episode of Property Investory. If you want to hear more about their journey, visit our website at propertyinvestory.com. simply type in the search bar Alice and Justin Hagen and select that episode to learn more about their story. Also, if you haven't subscribed to receive your free property case studies that I only send out exclusively via email, then head over to propertyinveststory.com and subscribe. These real case studies are from experienced property investors where they share specific numbers of their portfolio, the strategies, and much more. Simply visit propertyinveststory.com to receive your free case studies. Thanks for listening.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.